Kufar Akbar, everybody. Hi, this is Radio Free Kafir Stand, a radio program dedicated to rightly dividing the truth between Christianity and Islam. We examine the evidence for both of these faiths in order to arrive at the truth. It leads us to thus, and thus go I, shalom, peace, and blessings to you. This is your humble host, Eric. Thank you for coming to you live from the cavernous depths of the Kafir Cave in Dar al-Harb. Kafir Stand. It looks like somebody just joined me in in my Zoom room. Yes, Miss Stefania is here. Thank you for coming, Stephanie. I appreciate you so much. And I got other things going off here. Wow. Okay. We are here every Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 4 p.m. Central Standard Time. And for my Facebook peeps in Nigeria, it is 11 p.m. And the center of the universe is... My goodness, I don't know if you guys can hear that or not, but I got all kinds of bells and whistles going off here. In Jerusalem, it's midnight, so you guys need to go to bed. That's where our friend Damon Rosenberg, David Rosen is living. And he's still doing some journalism stuff, and I love watching. He's got such a unique perspective on everything, and he's always so into, I mean, he's somebody that you want to listen to. Very authoritative. Anyway, okay, so I am live casting. No, I'm not live casting on Facebook today. What I'm going to be doing, I'm over here on my Zoom. I'm getting better audio on here. When I live cast on my Radio Free Kafir Stand page to begin with, the audio is really not good. And so I'm just going to upload this at the end of the show, and we'll do a better, you'll be able to understand it much better-est than what it is. Remember, a Kafir is someone who does not heed the beliefs and prescriptions held by the religion of Islam, and that is in the new Encyclopedia of Islam, dated 2001. We have to start saying 20 whatever now. That's not 2000, it's 20. It's like saying 1976 or whatever. You have to say 20 whatever, because we said 1976, now it's 2076. You know, we have to get better at that. Kafir Stand is Dar al-Harb, the house of war. The land's not ruled by Sharia, unlike Pakistan, Afghanistan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, etc. All those stands are ruled by Sharia. Not here, not as long as I draw breath. If you want to call into the show, the call-in number today, like every Cedar Rapids Sunday, is area code 319-527-6706. Let me say it one more time. Area code 319-527-6706. I have the normal five things that I'm going to get through today. I'm going to do a monologue, and then we're going to do just a couple news stories. And then we're going to do Why Not Ask a Muslim again this week. They had a doozy of an article that I have to get to. Then we'll move over to the Crier's Corner and the Truth Train. I'm not exactly sure how long today's show is going to be. But I'm going to try to make it, you know, I'm going to try to keep it out there to an hour, and not go much longer than an hour. I just got off of 2 hours of doing Zoom. We have that Cross and Crescent discussion group. And today's group, we had 17, 18 people in there today. It was pretty rambunctious, and it's a lot of fun. So if you ever get a chance, look me up on my Facebook. I have a Zoom link for you there. To click on, and you can come right in and join right in the discussion. We're going to work on the format a little bit, because the format this week, I don't know, it's just a little, I don't know, it just didn't seem like it was flowing like it should. There was parts of it that were all right, but not for the most part. Okay, the monologue this week is something that's very difficult to do. We're going to have a show. My understanding is this Tuesday in Kel's spot at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. If those of you that do not know, I learned Wednesday night that Kel had passed away, and it was really surprising. She had not been here for about 3-4 weeks, and I was really not sure. I'd sent her some emails. I'd reached out to her on Instant Messenger, and of course, you know, no replies. So if you listen to my show regularly, you would have noticed her absence. And every Sunday, I always start it off with, I am again joined and directed by the Red of the Right, Kel. If you notice, I did not say that this week, as it just would have been too hard to say because she's not here. She's been here every week. I'm going to get it together. I got this. She's been here every week, regardless of her condition. Always wanting to help. I'm going to have to come back to this. I can't do this right now. I thought I could. I should have rehearsed it. So I'm just saying, just like O'Kelly say, maybe I ought to come back to this and try this a little bit. Try this a little bit later. Let's go ahead and start with some news. The news is always good news. Let me bring this up. Doggone you, camper. What a sissy man. This was tougher than I thought it was going to be. The news this week is really kind of one-sided, and I really caught it from some people on Facebook this week when we were interacting with one another. I had posted a picture or a video, a short video on my my Eric Smith page of me playing catch with my dog, Frisbee. And this dog, I mean, he's good. I mean, I throw that Frisbee, and I throw it out there 30, 40 yards, and he goes out there and snaps it right out of there. He's really good with it. And the reason why I posted that originally back in July was in response to an article that was posted on the Gates of Vienna, I think it was, dealing with a Vietnamese woman getting a beatdown by Muslims for the very fact that she was just walking her dogs. So I thought, well, okay, if you're going to beat a woman unconscious because she's just out walking her dogs, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to stick you right back with it, because this is what your faith teaches. I'm just going to stick you right back with it, and I'm going to call my dog Muhammad. So I posted this video of me playing catch with the dog, and I said something, welcome, or this is Muhammad Ibn Kufar. I call him Muhammad Ibn Kufar. I thought it was hilarious. Muhammad Ibn Kufar, my dog. The Muhammad of the Kafir is what it basically is saying. And I caught it from this girl. She said I was the devil. I was evil. I don't know. She was calling me everything but Christian. That's what she was doing. And I posted another article up there, and this is the article that I'm going to talk about this week. It's an Australian, or Austrian, not Australian, Austrian, a Muslim taxi driver refused to transport guide dogs for the blind. Now, this is plural. Taxi drivers are refusing to transport people who are blind because they have an animal that will assist them with their disability. Now, let that sink into your heads just for a second. Imagine the tables turned in any other way, shape, version, or fashion on that one. Imagine that it was a Christian or maybe a Hindu. A Hindu would be a great one. With the sacred cow and all these things. Imagine it had been a Hindu that had done that. The outcry, the international outcry that would have arrived and been derived from that would have been, well, we would still be hearing about it, but nothing is said about this. Nothing is even mentioned in any of the mainstream outlets, media outlets. So if you're going to deny somebody who needs assistance, I mean, think of people who are blind. You know, I'm really hard of hearing. I don't have my hearing aids in here, but I'm really hard of hearing, and I have to use hearing aids in my classroom, or I can't understand a word you're saying. So I know what it's like to have one of your senses, one of your five senses, or is it six? No, five senses. Doesn't matter. One of your senses like that greatly diminished. I could not imagine having a complete impairment of being completely deaf. That would be that'd be way too much. But yet, if you are blind, completely blind, can't see a thing, and you're trying to live a normal life, and what enables you to live a life that could even be remotely classified as being normal, that's taken away from you because it insults somebody. Your dog insults somebody. The dog that brings you some normalcy to your life insults somebody. So they won't transport you and your dog because it insults their religious sensibilities. Well, here's a cure for that. If you are going to not transport people because they have a dog and get a different job. Go someplace else. Don't let the door hit you in the ass and go find something else to do. If you are going to discriminate against somebody because of your religious supremacy, where you think that you are so much holier than everybody else because, well, I don't eat pork. I don't have a dog. And oh, by the way, one of the guys that is on the show, this Cross and Crescent discussion group, nicest gentleman you'd ever want to meet. His name's Magdi Muhammad. And he says that, I mean, there's all kinds of things that I disagree with him on about, but during the show today, it was classic. He's got dogs. And when you're doing this and you're on Zoom and you hear different noises from, you know, you don't know whose mic is hot and whose is not. And I hear these dogs barking and I'm like, who in the heck? And I'm looking at, you know, who's muted and who's Magdi's the only one that's not muted. And then he fesses up, well, those are my dogs. Okay, but when we get back to this, this guy is being denied, or blind people are being denied the ability to be transported, to use the taxis, because the Muslim taxi drivers are refusing them travel. Does that sound right to you? Does that, I mean, it's kind of a rhetorical question. We all know that, that doesn't sound right. That's not the right thing to do. That's just, it's crazy. But yet, we let a segment of society to get away with it. Why? Because we don't want to insult their religious sensibilities. How about if we appeal to your humanity? How about if we say, hey, yo, you know, here's a fellow human being that, I mean, this is what makes us genuinely human. You don't find this in any other, the mammal race. You don't find this anywhere else in the world. Well, we will go out and we will do what we can to help the helpless. You know, if you go out in the nature, yeah, I mean, it's a dog-eat-dog world out there. It's survival of the fittest. We as human beings, this is our humanity. This is what makes us uniquely human. This is why we think that Hitler lost his humanity when he starts clearing out the asylums there in Germany, the people that were not mentally fit, not physically fit, and killing them. This is what makes us human. So when you, as a Muslim, can use your own writings, your Hadith, your seerah of the Prophet, who hated dogs, by the way, especially black dogs, who hated dogs, and you're following that pattern of conduct, I would suggest that you get a different pattern of conduct to follow, because this is sick. And I'm just gonna leave it at that. Okay, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna go trying to get back to this thing about Cal. Maybe I just overshot there and I was a little too emotional. I'm sorry. But we're going to have a show for this Tuesday night. And, if you all want to come, I mean, of course, everybody in the chat room is going to be there. I know I can see that. And there's all kinds of other people that have sent me, messages on Facebook and such, about them coming. So let me just say a couple things about this woman. She's been here every Sunday for the past year and a half. And she hasn't complained one iota. Whenever I'm out and I need a guest host, she has no problem going in. And she never said a word, looking for a word in gratitude. She was always there. She helped me in every possible way, especially when I was first trying to thinking about doing this show. She was nothing but an encouragement to this. I was scared, to be honest with you, when I first got out behind this microphone, I was scared out of my wits. I didn't know what I was doing. Well, I still don't know what I'm doing. But, I mean, it was really, really bad there, if you go back and you listen to some of the archives. And she was always just this humble spirit of encouragement for me. For me, thinking about this, you know, who am I after all? I'm just some goober out here that, you know, likes to run his mouth. He likes to talk a lot. But she said things that were different. She said, no, you have something that you can contribute to this cause, things that you can. And she was always this encouragement. And there was always the technical support, not only the moral support that she gave, it was also the technical support that I would get from her. When I first started doing the show, you have to learn how to build a show, and, you know, we would get there and we would get on the phone, and we would go, you know, she would walk me through this process 2, 3, 4, 5 times, as many times as it took in order for me to do it with some, you know, a certain amount of confidence. Now I got, I've done it for a year and a half, going on 2 years now. It's not a problem. But when you're first doing it, it's pretty daunting to go through all these steps just to get a show booked. And, you know, anytime that I would have some type of technical problems during the show, she was always jumping up in there and getting on the mic, like when I would mute myself. She'd go, where's the Kaffer? Where's, you know, and she would always try to use humor when doing it. So that was always nice to have that there. And one time I had scheduled the show. I don't know if I did this once or twice, but I scheduled the show for, I think it was 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So that means it's 3 p.m. Central Standard Time. So she calls me up and she says, hey, yo, your show started 20 minutes ago and we got nothing but dead air. What are you doing? And she was nice about it, and nice enough about it, I guess. But, yeah, she would. that was a classic that day. And she goes, oh, no worries. I'll just go through. And I don't know how she has some type of editing software. I think she uses Audacity, and she edited the idiocy of mine out. Okay, she's been the cornerstone. Yeah, I put down she's been the cornerstone of this show. It's kind of hard. And as you can imagine, I've mentioned a couple times when she wasn't there how leery I am of trying to do this. So she always provides that that foundation that I could rely on when I would get on here. Let's see here. A little history between Kel and I. Kel and I, I've never met the woman personally. We've interacted several times on her shows and off the air. Always a kind and sweet person. We've just probably been going on about maybe 10 years now that I've known her. I knew her before she had her show on the Radio Jihad Network. This is that network that the Southern Poverty Law Center said, these are my people, a bunch of big hate group in upstate New York. Who knew? But even before we were declared a hate group by the SLP, the Southern Poverty Law Center, SPLC, whatever you want to call them, before we became the Global Patriot Radio Network, before she even had a show on here, she had a network of her, you know, herself of shows. And she was making more videos than Osama bin Laden, for crying out, or shows anyway. And every time you turn around, there she is on Blog Talk Radio. And they're always interesting to listen to because she always – and here's the thing. You know, she can sit there and read an article verbatim during a show, and you're sitting there listening to her because she made it so personable. And this is what her personality is, very magnanimous, if I even said that right. But that's – I mean that was her. And she would draw you into it. And then I remember how excited she was when she did get a slot on Radio Jihad, how she excited she was about that. And, you know, we talked offline on that. And that was, you know, you kind of share in those victories. What the heck is going on? I'm just getting sick of this. Who's dinging me over here? Knock it off. Let's see. Her idioms, some of the idioms that she had, I just love that because she would say, you know, it's kind of, sometimes we say things just to fill in our thought processes, and that was just one thing I just say. And then occasionally you'd get her so riled up, she would drop the F-bomb. And then you're sitting there listening to this humble spirit, and the next thing you know, she's shouting through the mic, and she's dropping the F-bomb, and it's just quality entertainment, nonetheless. She had a passion for this cause that I had never seen before and still haven't seen since. Just the tireless commitment that she had. You just don't get to that. She was what we would say a very fierce warrior in this. But at the same time, she's one of the humblest people you can speak to. And here's another thing. I wrote this down. She can rip your butt off in one breath when you crossed her. And I know that because she did that a couple times to me, and turn around and be as nice as pie tea in the next sentence. You know, it was just her personality. Let's see here. She was a friend, and I'm never going to try to minimize that. I used to call her the Bell, Kel the Bell, and she liked that. Kel my Bell Fritzy. Okay, I'm not going to belabor this anymore. I miss her. Will? Okay. Tuesday, we're going to have a show for her. Vito's going to host it. And I hope you tune in. Because I think we're all going to miss her. Okay, in the chat room, I got a pretty good chat room. We got Biggins here and Gary from north of the border here. I see the Chief and Tim tapping into the truth and the Vorpabite and Bigfoot. Neil Biggins put something that I think is very profound. Kel did not fear Islam. Islam feared Kel. So that is so very true. And you're right, Vorp. Say something for the memorial show. Shut your Kaffir mouth and move on to the next segment of your show and do your show. I got it. Why not Ask a Muslim? Did you know, according to Ask a Muslim, Mecca is mentioned in the Bible? And you know what? I found it. It's right next to where Muhammad is in the Bible. Exactly. The article starts off with saying the Bible, the divine book of Christians, was revealed over thousands of years. Actually, 1,400 years, but who's correcting you? Although the writers of the Bible are said to be divinely inspired, they purported God, like human beings, to need to have rest, to regret, and to have a son. Likewise, the prophets and messengers of God, who are supposed to be good examples for their people, were divinely guided, are purported to have drunk alcohol, got intoxicated, and committed adultery. My question is what's wrong with you? I mean, what is your problem? Muslims are told that they are to believe all the prophets, to include Prophet Adam, who we still haven't figured out who he prophesied to, but let's just say he did. Okay, he lived a long time, so maybe he got some prophecy in there. I don't know. We never get it recorded anywhere, and I'm sure that the Muslims have it somewhere. I think it might be attached to that Injil that Jesus was supposedly given that we have no physical evidence for either. But hey, that's just me making sense, and I'm going to stop right here. Let's see. I wrote, I guess it's okay then to kill people for insulting your prophet. So if you're going to be upset with people drinking alcohol, which you can do in heaven, by the way, got intoxicated, which will be in heaven. Oh, no, they say that you can drink all the alcohol you want, but you don't get intoxicated. What sense does that make? What is it? Stupid. And committed adultery. Yes, David committed adultery. But he repented. Muhammad committed adultery, and this was in this is one of the things that we brought up today in the Cross and the Crescent discussion group. Muhammad committed adultery, and the Magdi is trying to change the chronology. He's trying to say Muhammad first freed Mary the Copt, making Muhammad this great freer of slaves. Then he married her, then he consummated the marriage. But that doesn't make any sense when we examine what the Quran says, what Muhammad said to Hafsa when he caught him having sex with Mary in Hafsa's bed. And Aisha was upset about it too. He said, Prophet, why do you forbid those things that Allah has given you? Why are you forbidding this? Why are you making promises to these women that you'll never have sex with them again when you have these women that your right hand possesses? If your right hand possesses a woman, she's not your wife. She's your slave. That's what that means in every single case. And I didn't get a chance to bring that up today, but I'm sure we'll have time. We're going to do this show every Sunday, too, just trying to sell it and get enough people to be there. He would enslave women and children, but people in the Bible got drunk and got intoxicated and committed adulteries. He raped newly captive slave girls and committed adultery, but people in the Bible got drunk and got intoxicated, or drank alcohol and got intoxicated, committed adultery. But having sex with your slave girl is not adultery, according to Allah, who has redefined adultery for his boy Muhammad. But then you get upset when we would dare to drink a glass of wine, or we would dare to have maybe a BLT or something. Please. Now, the article goes on to say, on the other hand, most biblical prophecies about Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, were obliterated, and the relics of the remaining prophecies are denied and misinterpreted. One word. Proof. Where is your proof? Proof. Anything at all. Any type of writing, any type of extant manuscript showing us where Muhammad is in the Old Testament. I know what the answer is. Oh, the proof is that Jeremiah 8, it says that the lying pens of the prophet. No, it doesn't say that. It doesn't say that the scribes changed the Bible. It says that their teachings on the Bible were different than what the Bible had taught. So save it. So here's what he's saying is all the Bibles, all of the, and here's the point. What he's saying is all of the writers of the Bible knew Muhammad was coming, so they wrote him out of the Bible. So he's supposed to be in the Bible, and then all of the writers, all 44, I think there's 44 writers of the Bible, all 44 say, hey, there's Muhammad. We don't want him in here, so we're going to take him out. Is that your argument? Really? Is that, I mean, come on. I mean, this is what we call credulity. You are asking us to believe something that is completely unbelievable, especially when taking into consideration how fast the Bible, the gospel spread, and these books, these letters spread and were translated into other languages. All that had to be destroyed, had to be altered, had to be changed because it had Muhammad in the Bible? Really? Do you know that we have complete Bibles that predate Muhammad? By centuries, for the Codex Vaticanus and the Codex Sinaiticus, complete Bibles, which are the same thing that we have today. We have these things, and we look, no Muhammad. Well, how can they write Muhammad out of there 200 years before Muhammad comes? How do they know he was coming? Crazy. And also, I'd like somebody to read just one misinterpreted verse from the Bible. Go ahead. Give it your best shot. Then it goes on to say, nonetheless, we can still find in today's Bible some relics of the prophecies about the Prophet Muhammad. Peace be upon him. Muslims, Kaaba, Mecca, okay. No, you can't. You can't find anything in the Bible that references Muhammad. And if you can, you and I, I'm going to challenge you to call my show anytime you want to. As a matter of fact, let me look. I'm going to put this challenge out there right now. Okay. Anybody out there? No, nobody. Irate, tireless minority. I saw you on Facebook this morning, Mom. Thank you for coming. I just love that. Irate, tireless minority. Okay, so let's get back to the why not ask a Muslim. Okay, it says Makkah is named Baca in the Bible. No, it's not. Baca is Petra in the Bible. He goes on to say, the name Baca is specifically mentioned in the Bible in chapter 84 of Psalms. This chapter tells us about a sacred place for which souls yearn, hearts and flesh sing for joy to living God, and praise is sung. Okay, so you're going to tell me, here's what you're trying to tell me. You're trying to tell me, okay, David is writing this psalm, and he is, what does it say? He's tells us a sacred place for which souls yearn. Okay, I want to go to Mecca. I'm sitting in Jerusalem, up in the mountains where it's nice and cool during the summer and not too cold during the winter. But I want to go to Mecca where it's 125 degrees in August. Is that about right? Which souls yearn, hearts flesh sing for. Are you kidding me? I need to finish this. I'm sorry. This place is called the Valley of Becca. Becca is described as a dry place, which is made into, you bet it's a dry place. You get a quarter inch of rainfall all year. Yeah. Mecca is a dry place, but not Becca. Becca is described as a dry place. No, it's not. Which is made into a place of springs in the vicinity of tents. A day there is better than 1,000 elsewhere. Okay, so number one, Mecca is really not in a valley. If you want to say Mecca is in a valley, okay, you're going to say, okay, Capper, you live on a mountaintop. I kind of live on a hill here in Iowa. So my hill would be a mountaintop if Mecca is a valley. Number two, Becca refers to weeping trees. Weeping trees. Key word there, not weeping, but trees. Trees. You know, these things that grow up out of the ground and they got leaves on them and they require large amounts of water to exist. How much water did I say Mecca got? Is it that? I think I cited it here someplace. Yeah, a quarter inch a year. So are you going to have weeping trees there? Yeah, the trees that you're going to have, they'd be dead. They're going to be weeping all right because they got no water there. Okay, so if you go to Mecca today, how many indigenous trees do you see? No, none, zero. What? No trees unless they're being watered by not the Zamzam well. So this isn't referring to Mecca. This is referring to Petra. If you want a good book on this, look up a guy by the name of Dr. Dan Gibson. He does a great job of identifying Petra as this place. If Mecca, okay, let's see. Oh, let's see, there's no mountains. Okay, let's go on. Okay, he says, how lovely is your dwelling place, Lord Almighty, in a desert that is 125 degrees. I'm sorry. My soul yearns, even faints for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God. Even the sparrow has found home, and the sparrow a nest for herself. Okay, let's analyze this. What is this? Is this, this is Psalms, okay. So he is saying Psalms is prophesying of Mecca. Okay, let's analyze this just for a second. It says the Quranic and the biblical scholar does, he cites the Quran, fine. Okay, my soul yearns, even faints for the courts of the Lord. When I look at this swallow thing, the swallow a nest for herself. I got a swallow that builds a nest right outside the Capper Cave here every year. At least I think it's the same. I don't know. I can't tell them apart. But I'm assuming it's the same swallow. If it's not, maybe it's one of her kids that comes back every year and builds a nest in the same exact place. We got to go in and clean it out every year because it interferes with my gutter. Never mind. So, or you see swallow's nests under bridges. I mean, does the bridges that make that prophesied by David? No, it does not. Okay. The verse also says, our Lord, I have settled some of my descendants in the uncultivated valley near your sacred house, O Lord, that may establish prayer. So make hearts among the people. Incline toward them and provide for them from the fruits that they might be grateful. This is from the Quran. Okay, so, O Lord, I have settled some of my descendants in the uncultivated valley. This is supposed to be referring to Mecca. Have you been to Mecca? Do you think for a second that you can cultivate diddly squat there? Where are the fields? Where are these seeds that you can unearth in the dirt that show that they had agriculture there before? Let me tell you where they are. Exactly. They don't exist. This is never a cultivated valley. Let's see. Nothing has ever been cultivated in Mecca. It gets a quarter inch of rain every year. Okay. Nothing effing grows there, people. So this cannot be it. The sparrow, I talked about that. The swallow, I've talked about that. Blessed are those who dwell in your house and are ever praising. Millions of Muslims go to Mecca every year for Umrah and pilgrimage. They spend several days occupying all their time, praising God and submitting to Him. They are blessed because they sacrifice money and everything to visit and dwell in the house of God. If you go to Mecca today and during the Hajj, turn out to be a scam. If you look at the Kaaba today and the mosque there today, They've covered up the entire thing. They've cemented over all of it. So you can't do excavation there or any type of archaeological inquiry. You can't. I mean, they've dug it up and they've cemented over it. They have this clock the size of, you know, the Twin Towers, for crying out loud. This thing's absolutely huge. And they have all these other buildings there. These people that stay there, they stay in suites. They stay in these cabins outside of their air conditioned. They have all the water pumped in. My question is the water issue. I mean, this is where we start talking about the Zamzam well. That's something that I pointed out here. The Zamzam well. The Zamzam well doesn't have any water in it. And if it does, it's very little. And why is that? Well, it's because they get a quarter inch of rain a year. So to say that Mecca was on a trade route is stupid. It was never on any trade route. If they were going to move goods up the west coast of Arabia, if you notice that there is a sea called the Red Sea that goes up the entire coast and even splits into the Gulf of Aqaba and goes clear up past Saudi Arabia, almost to Jordan. It goes up to Israel, at least, and Jordan. So why would you pack goods on camels and try to ship them across land up to a plateau, by the way, up over in the middle of the desert, when you just put it on a boat? Why would you do that? I've never heard a good answer for that. Never, ever, never. I'm going to finish this up next week. Let me draw a line here so I can get to these other things. I don't want to spend too much time today belaboring this. I'm still a little hoarse from the previous show. All right, what I want to do now is I want to shift gears, and I want to get over here to the Crier's Corner. If you know anything about the Crier's Corner is this little segment that I've been doing the last couple weeks that focuses on the psychology of perpetual butthurt. And that would be Kenny Bomer playing the victim card, saying that it was Muslims who are being discriminated against across the globe. It is Muslims who are being attacked. It is Muslims who have had propaganda waged against them, when in reality, that's not the reality. And in his book, Consider Islam, Disproving the Patriots of Propaganda, he really doesn't give you a reason to consider Islam at all. None. He doesn't give you any reasons other than, you know, it's a maligned ideology, and therefore you should consider it because we're attacked all the time. That's basically his argument. But we get on page 91 today, and the title of this is Where the Enemy Lies. And he begins, Islam is a complete and comprehensive means to acquire peace by submitting to Allah. While Islam is perfect, he goes on to say, people are not. And so Islam has been mishandled and misunderstood by people. Okay, so let's just stay with that idea for just a minute. So if Islam has been mishandled and misused by certain people, that means that there has been a time where it has been applied perfectly and peaceably and equitably. And so my question is when? What example do you have where this has happened? If you indeed want the Sharia to spread, Islam to spread across the entire planet, and have everybody be subjected to its precepts, then I would think that you would be able to say, hey, there's an example of where it has worked. It's kind of like socialism or communism. It's always, well, let me rephrase this. Socialism and communism, their ideologies are always best applied by those people telling you that they can do it. Even though we have no examples of them being successful in the past and universal prosperity spreading to everybody in the past, and essentially the only thing that happens under socialism and communism is that, well, it just sucks for everybody now, is basically what it is. That's what that is. So what he's trying to say is, okay, well, look, only if we were in charge of this today, then today we could have this utopia that we could all live in. No, because if there's been no time in the past 1,400 years where this has worked out, what makes you think, just as in communism, socialism, what makes you think that you can do better? What makes you think things will be different today? My question is, I have several questions here. And this is saying a couple things about Islam. If we go back to the earliest caliphs, people went to, they went to war with, they, on the first, was, I don't know if Abu Bakr was assassinated, but I know that Omar and Uthman were assassinated, and I know Ali was assassinated. So all these guys are killed by their own countrymen, our own co-religionists. That doesn't sound very peaceful to me. And these are the guys who are supposed to be the ones that the standard of conduct to follow, or the right, what they call them, the rightly guided caliphs. Well, if it doesn't work out for them, makes you think that it's going to work out for you? They went to war and killed people for apostasy. They had wars of apostasy, for crying out loud. Does that sound like a utopia that you want to work? They struggled for power and killed each other for that power. This is where Muslim, now folks, this is Muslim killing Muslim. This isn't the Christians coming down and saying, hey, we're going to kill you. This has nothing to do with that. They're killing each other. So the question is where can I find this Sharia being applied or implemented correctly? Where is this? When was this? Who applied it? Was anyone discriminated against during this? Because if you look at the Sharia right now, in the application of it, people are going to be discriminated against based on their religious beliefs. Is that okay? Is that really okay? And I got in a discussion. I can't remember who I got in a discussion with this past week, maybe it was the week before last. It was about paying the jizya, where Christians, I think it was Stephanie who we were talking about this week. We were paying the jizya. I'm going to have to pay the jizya if I'm going to live in an Islamic country. Is that fair? Well, since, you know, we don't pay the zakat, we don't pay the 2.5%, well, it's only fair that we would have to pay this tax to have the privilege of living amongst Muslims. Is that right? No, because I'm still paying the tithing to my church, just as you're paying the zakat to your mosque. Now I, in addition to paying my tithing to my church, have to pay a tax to you. That doesn't sound too fair. But we protect you. Protect me from who? Who are you protecting me from? Why do I need this protection? It's sick. It's like the mafia with a god is what it's like. Women are allowed to be beaten under Sharia. Under the Sharia, I can pick the book up and go to section M where it says that you can beat your wife if you feel that she is being rebellious. And it uses Quran verses and Hadith to back it up. What else does it have? This is where people are allowed to dissent from Muhammad. Can people dissent from what Muhammad taught? No. If you do, you get your head cut off. That's apostasy. You are not to challenge the prophet or anything that is in the Quran. And my question is could I worship freely if this was applied? So when Kenny starts saying, well, this was never fully implemented before, and that this has never been perfectly managed before. My question is when and how? I mean, what are you going to do differently? What can you do differently? Here's some of the things that he has to say. The true believers surrender to being rightly guided by the speech of Allah in the Quran, as well as the Sunnah, the example of Muhammad, peace be upon him, as an example of guidance of everyday life. But you go on to that, Islam seeing division taking place within a quarter century after the death of the Prophet Muhammad. Okay, so why don't you have any division now? Oh, wait. Whoa. Is there division today in Islam? Let me think. Have you heard of the Shi'i Sunni? Oh, my goodness, yes. Do Muslims kill Muslims today more than they kill Christians or anybody? Yeah, they're killing each other. It's sick. He goes on to say, there was something else that I wanted to read here. Muslims throughout the world continue to speak out against acts of terror. When? Where? Who? I know Stefania does. She does it all the time. But I don't see it a lot on Facebook. What do? They try to justify what's going on. He said, well, we're being attacked. Okay, you can say anybody's attacking you. Just like those goobers down in Garland, Texas. Oh, you're attacking our prophet. You're attacking our religion. So we're going to attack you back. You're drawing a picture, dude, and you're going to go kill somebody over it? Yeah, you can justify anything you want, and that's what has happened over the centuries. Muslims throughout the world continue to speak out against acts of terror, but the efforts are overshadowed by misinformation spread by the two sects of radicals that exist today, the Islamophobes and the terrorists. You know, we're one of the same, don't you know? These two groups, and you can't hardly tell us apart. I mean, one guy's out there blowing himself up, and the other guy is saying, hey, look, this guy's blowing himself up. Hey, we must be on the same team, for Pete's sake. Really? Yeah, this justification this guy uses in this book. And here's another one. This is what he accused me of. He says they have these kafirs, these Islamophobes, they have caused doubt and disbelief to exist. You bet, buddy. I most certainly have, and they ain't going to stop. Okay, so what do I hear coming around the corner here? I think I hear something coming. Yes, I do. I hear the crazy train.
On the board!
Okay, the music's over. Hey, listen, I was just telling people in my Zoom chat, because I muted myself on my show here, that I get reported. If I play that over the speakers and it's recorded, I get recorded by some cowardly lion guy. And in fact, he sent me some emails. Golly, this guy, I live in his head and I don't want to be there anymore. Just leave me alone. Just go away. Anyway. The most viewed post that I ever made was the show that he reported me for. This is so classic. Was the one where I got reported because I played Crazy Train or played Hell's Bells. I can't remember which one he was reporting me on. But I had 12,300 views on that one video. The one that he got me muted in the UK and in the United States. Way to go, Lion. You are such an Einstein knot. Okay, let's go back over to the Truth Train. The Truth Train today deals with Surah 17, Ayat 1. Surah 17, Ayat 1. Now, those of you who are familiar with the Quran and familiar with the Hadith surrounding this is the story of Muhammad going to Jerusalem, going to Jerusalem. And this is what it says: glory to be who carried his servant by night from the inviolable place of worship to the far distant place of worship, the neighborhood whereof we have blessed, and we might show him of our tokens. Lo, only he is the hearer and seer. Okay, so what this is talking about, and this is how the tradition holds it, this farthest mosque is supposed to be the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, where Al-Aqsa Mosque is today. As a matter of fact, the Dome of the Rock rests there today. And Muhammad supposedly had this episode where he leaves Mecca on this winged horse, this winged pony. He's flying this thing from Mecca to Jerusalem. That's like 700 miles, 600 miles. I'm not sure. Somewhere around there. It's a good jaunt, okay? And he's riding this horse to this place. Then what he does is he goes up into heaven, and he gets to see Allah. And in the meantime, Allah tells him, look, Muhammad, you have to pray, I don't know, I think it's 100 times a day. And Muhammad, on his way back down to earth, runs into, I think it's Moses. And Moses says, look, dude, that's way too many times to pray. Go back up there and get it down. So he goes back up and gets it down to 50, comes back down, too many, comes down, got it down to 30, got it down to 20, got it down to 10. Then he finally gets it down to 5, and Moses says, that's a good number. Okay, so there's a lot of questions going on here, and I'm going to get to the anachronism that we find here. But the questions are, why is Allah commanding Muhammad to pray that many times if they know it's way too many? That's all you'd be doing. You wouldn't get anything done. That's all you prayed 100 times a day or 50 times a day or whatever it was. Why is he telling him this? Muhammad, you need to pray to me. Peace be upon me. Very many times during the day. Really? And you're going to believe this as being true? Second thing is that when Muhammad got on this winged horse, that's a miracle in and of itself. I mean, because if you're traveling on a horse, a winged horse, you got to be flying. I mean, you got to be going fast if you're going from Mecca to Jerusalem to heaven and back, and then back to Mecca that night. I don't know. Maybe there's some type of special breathing apparatus that he was wearing, or you know, that's not in the Hadith and that's not in the Quran. I don't know. But that's not my problem with this story. Even though it is very problematic, that is not my problem. My problem with this story is it's anachronistic. And the reason why is that the mosque that Muhammad traveled to, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, was not built until 705. Oh, but Kafir, he's talking about where the Dome of the Rock is. Okay. The Dome of the Rock wasn't built until 691. Muhammad died in 630. This is 632. This is 60 years before Muhammad died. So where's the mosque? If you travel, it says, what does it say? Some of the most popular, worshipped upon the most distant place of water. Where's the mosque? Where is it? Where are they worshiping Allah in Jerusalem at this time? Show me. The Dome of the Rock is a shrine. It's not even a mosque. It's a shrine to Antichrist is what it is. It really is. If you look at the inner and outer ambulatory, say not three, Jesus was only a prophet. He was not the Son of God. How be it that God would have a son, really? And you're going to, denying the very thing that the Bible teaches? Say not, nobody ever said three people. Say not three. Oh, say not three. Three what? You got a mouse in your pocket? Good night. And then to say that, okay, well, the Dome of the Rock was there, but the Dome of the Rock is a shrine to Muhammad, his night journey. Where in the original mosque or in the original shrine does it say that? There's not a word mentioned there. There's boo, nothing. In the in and out of ablutories, there's nothing there saying that this was a shrine to his night journey. What this was, the Caliph Abdul Malik built this in 691 as a victory over the Jews and the Christians in that city. That's what it was built for. It was built high atop the Temple Mount overlooking the Church of the Holy Sepulchre on top of the very spot where the Jews had their temple and where Abraham went to sacrifice Isaac. Not Ishmael, Isaac, by the way. The big difference. And to say that this existed at this time is stupid. Not only factually, but archaeologically and historically. It's stupid. It's an anachronism. And when we start finding anachronisms like this in the Quran, we can say that the Quran is a bunch of hooey. It is not true. It cannot be true in light of historical facts. All right, a little alrighty then. I see somebody's on the line there. I don't see their hand up, so I'm going to assume that they're not interested in talking. Again, everybody that came today, thank you so much for coming. I hope we see everybody on Tuesday when we start celebrating our Bel Kel. And Christy Johnson called me yesterday. Evidently, my lamenting on Facebook was a little too harsh for everybody, and she wanted to make sure that I was all right. I'm going to be all right. It's just hard. Whenever you lose somebody like this, It just makes things difficult. And you can't imagine continuing to do the show without her, but I will. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be, or at least as easy as she made it. I won't have those words of encouragement anymore. But I'm going to be here, and I'm going to keep on keeping on, just as she'd want. So we'll see y'all Tuesday. God bless you. God bless Kel.
Deep-seated in the American citizen is pride in his community as an expression of all that his country stands for. Individual independence, with respect for the rights of others, born of the concept that all men are free and equal.
Bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye now. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.